It didn't do like that? Okay, yeah, it's fine. I'll be careful.
On the 18th, the ambassador will travel to Harare for 2 or 3 days and come back, and then he will travel again for elections and only come back after elections. Now, the question is it possible for the portfolio committee to meet on Monday, or do we want to forfeit our request for that meeting with the Zimbabweans? I want us to clear that because I indicated that we'll communicate to them even during the portfolio committee, so that before the DG make a presentation, we clear that up.
Do we have any choice in this matter? I don't think we do. And it is important for us to address that issue. So I suggest that we do meet on that Monday.
There's a proposal that we proceed to confirm Monday the 17th to meet with the Zimbabweans and discuss the situation in Zimbabwe in preparation for the meeting. Is that agreed, members? What time should this propose? I think we should propose the same time, 11 o'clock, which is the portfolio committee time normally to be on Wednesday. So we put it for 11 o'clock Monday the 17th. Okay. Thank you, members. DG, we are now in your hands. If you could introduce the colleagues who are here, and so that we should know who are they.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks to the members of the committee. I will start right at the extreme left there. Zodwa Lali is the chief director in the Asia branch. Next to her is Solisa Mabongo. Solisa is the chief director in the multilateral branch. She is basically in charge of overseeing our work at the UN. Next to Solisa is Nyameko Goso, who is currently heading our internal audit unit. Kurt, is there somebody next to you? Okay. Then it's Kurt Hobler. Kurt is the acting head of our Americas and Europe branch. Next to Kurt is Matuno Mbozolo, the head of our human resources. Next to Matu is Thandi Fadana, who is the chief director in finance, dealing basically with budget and expenditure. And next to Thandi is Asogyan Mosley, who is the CFO and head of corporate services. Next to her is Linda, who is the chief director in my office. Ernest is our person in Cape Town. He is a parliamentary liaison officer. Next to Ernest is Ambassador Minty, Abdul Minty. We have spoken about his responsibility previously, specialist on disarmament, on disarmament issues. And next to Abdul is Solisi Nkosi. Solisi is the head of the bilateral Africa branch, DDG. Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me start by just, first of all, just to really appreciate the understanding of the committee members, especially those who might have received documents late, and confirm indeed what the chairperson has said, that indeed we did send the stress plan document sometime last week. But as I say, we'll try to go through this and make sure that we can enable the committee to discharge its responsibility. Basically, when we deal with the budget process, in terms of the PFMA, and particularly in terms of chapter section 76 of the PFMA and chapter 5 of the Treasury Regulations, we are supposed to be guided by a rolling 3-year strategic plan, and hence we've tabled and formally tabled also to Parliament our strategic plan for 2008 up to 2010-11. Now, that strategic plan is supposed to also help us indicate areas that we'll focus on in the 3 years of the medium term, and hence the structure of our strategic plan would also indicate the areas, whether it's in the program content or if you go to the property acquisition phase or if you look at human resources, to indicate very clearly what it is that we'll start with in 08-09, what it is that we want to do in 09-10. And so today, as we discuss the budget for 08-09, we will also be guided by that strategic plan. Now, in the department, just to say, we have followed the process that is required, which culminated in the strategic planning session of the department on the 24th and 25th of February, at which strategic planning session the political guidance overall was given by the minister and the deputy ministers who attended that meeting. So in terms of the process that we followed prior to the taking of the strategic plan is in full conformity with the requirements both from the Auditor General from a performance auditing point of view as well as in terms of the PFMA. Now, the slides that I will run through here are the same slides that were circulated except with the part that is entitled resource allocation. We'll come to that. And in the part called resource allocation, we've added additional slides that might not have been there that in the presentation that was circulated yesterday. But they are in the new slides that you have. And again, it was trying to respond to some of the issues that the chairperson has raised. Now, just to say, this first slide basically confirms that the work of the department over the next 3 years will still be guided by those areas, and these have been the same areas that were in the previous strategic plan. Africa agenda, very key, South-South cooperation, North-South, our work in the global system of governance, and also strengthening both political and economic bilateral relations. And we also highlight the fact that in order to underpin that work, there's a series of interventions at an institutional level. The strengthening of the organizational improvement of support services and also professional services, particularly around protocol and public diplomacy. Now, starting with the African agenda, there are two areas of intervention. One is, of course, the strengthening of the multilateral institutions, and here we're referring to the AU, to NEPAD, and to SADC. And linked with that is, of course, all the issues around post-conflict reconstruction and peace and security in the continent. Then there's the issue of strengthening of bilateral relations. In this first plan, we'll go into some detail in terms of the different regions, what it is that we'll be focusing on in the medium term. A lot of this is work in progress, and a lot of it is just far much more to improve what we are already doing. Then, of course, with respect to the African agenda, a new element that we are focusing on has to do with the 2010 FIFA World Cup, given its designation as an African World Cup. With respect to the AU in particular, the main areas of focus for us will be around this work about the rationalization of the RSCs to engage that debate. There's the ongoing support to the Pan-African Parliament. Just to say, members will be aware that in our budget for this year, there's a sum of $143 million that has been put in our budget to commence the process of the building of the permanent headquarters of the Pan-African Parliament. And of course, from a content point of view, we would want to make sure that the debate in South Africa kicks off about our future vision of the Pan-African Parliament, on the issue of whether it should then move and have more legislative power. An area that has been lagging behind is the area around the financial institutions and the African courts, which we'll be focusing on. Then there's the work on the diaspora. This is the work that we reported last year. We were given by the AU. We did a lot of work last year, culminating in the ministerial meeting that was in November. The highlight of this year's activities will be Diaspora Summit, which will be held in November here in South Africa. Sorry, in October, between the 8th and 11th of October, with the support of the AU. And that, again, when it comes to the budget, that's a fully budgeted for activity. And then another area that we think we'll have to pay attention to is the work around strengthening of the AU-EU relations, following particularly the successful Lisbon Summit of last year. With respect to NEPAD, there are really two major issues that I want to focus on, or maybe three. The first one is the coordination internally of the work of NEPAD in South Africa. You will recall that we have now evolved the national strategy for NEPAD because we've always been worried about the fact that we have been the pioneers in the elaboration of NEPAD as an encompassing vision for the continent. But we have not had the requisite coordination internally between government and civil society and business generally. Last year we hosted a project conference to try and bring all these elements together. We will have a similar conference in the course of this year. Secondly, the next area that we'll focus on is about supporting the strengthening of the Secretariat as best we can. South Africa on an annual basis makes a contribution of 30 million rands to the NEPAD Secretariat. That is ongoing, and that amount, by and large, in the past 2 years, it's fair to say that has been the lifeline of certainly the work of the Secretariat of NEPAD. Then, of course, we want to move on with the work around the mobilization of resources, building on the great initiative, the Pan-Africa Infrastructure Development Fund that was launched in Ghana last year. With respect to SADC, maybe just to preface and say that SADC is going to be a major area of focus for us, both at the level of bilateral, but also in terms of the our regional work. We will be taking over as chair of SADC in August. We say that this presents both challenges and opportunities because it will enable us to steer the process of regional integration. But it has become clear to us, I think members are familiar with some of those difficulties, especially around the efforts, that in order to sustain this integration project, we have to focus on strengthening bilateral relations with individual SADC member states, and that's what we'll have to do. We think that the posture that we should assume is communicating very clearly that at a strategic level, South Africa has got a vested interest in a successful integration process. And I think that message we want to communicate very firmly and forcefully so that whatever issues were raised on the integration process, there is no confusion and there is no doubt about our commitment to this integration. We are also aware that as we deal with individual member countries, we have to be alive to the fact that countries have different economic possibilities. And these economic situations expose them sometimes to take decisions that we may believe are not consistent with the need for integration, and we must find a way to deal with that. Of course, as we deal with integration, peace and stability is very crucial, and we have to acknowledge that there are still residual areas of instability in the region that we'll have to work on. But we believe that by far the most important challenge for us, especially when we chair SADC, would be the need for us to make sure that we redirect the discussions around the integration agenda. And in fact, I think it's also going to be given emphasis, that perspective, by the fact that when we hold the summit in August, it will coincide with the time when SADC will be declaring the establishment of a free trade area in SADC. Some of the areas specific that we'll have to deal with relate to the ongoing discussions on the EU EFTA negotiations. I think that is going to test us significantly, building on the meetings that have been held recently, the ministerial meetings. We've heard about the outcomes of that. Quite clearly, this is a process that's going to evolve in a very delicate manner in the course of 2008. We also have to participate in the elections that are oncoming in Zimbabwe and Angola during this period. In the case of Angola, it will be the parliamentary elections during this financial year. And honorable members know that we will be sending observers certainly to Angola, to Zimbabwe, as part of SADC. With South-South cooperation, we believe there's no major strategic shift really is to continue the work that we are doing in all these organizations of the South, and we've indicated them there. I'll talk a bit about IFSA, but also to focus on the new development, which is around the establishment of the Africa-India Forum, which will be launched now in April 2008, and South Africa will be participating in that up to the summit level. Saying to about IFSA in particular, that we really need to consolidate. We will be hosting a ministerial this year. We hosted the summit last year, which we believe was successful. But we also believe the major achievement is now, which we need to consolidate, is the involvement of other sectors of society. And of course, honorable members are aware, having participated themselves in the form of the parliamentary forum. And we indicate that some of those areas, the women's group, business, parliamentary forum, that we need to focus on. With respect to our relations with the North, there are four areas, really. We've highlighted two in the slide, but I'll talk to the other two. On the G8, I think the main thing is to continue engaging the G8, and the focus of our work is to leverage possibilities for the African agenda in particular. Of course, our work with the G8 is going to be anchored around, to a large extent, of our participation as members of the Outreach 5, which involvement in a structured form is also going to depend on whether the G8 responds to the expectations of the Outreach 5, which is really for greater involvement in the agenda setting of the meetings of the G8. There are some warning signals on that, but nevertheless, I think we're still declaring a commitment to participate in a formal way. But of course, our approach is also to participate and engage the individual members of the G8 to strengthen bilateral relations. On TICAD this year, we'll see TICAD 4, and there are important issues on the agenda which accord very well with some of our foreign policy priorities in the continent. Particularly, the agenda for TICAD this year is going to be focusing on three things. One is issues around climate change, which is a major growing tropical issue in the continent. Second is going to be how to sustain African economic growth to address the issues of poverty, and the issues about peace and human security. Now, all those issues are issues relevant to us, so we would want to participate and steer TICAD to make sure that really it becomes very concrete. The two other areas that I've not put on this slide, but as we've already referred to them, is that, of course, there's going to be a lot of work with the EU and individual EU member states, but in the context of both the EPA negotiations, but also to implement our trade development cooperation agreement. Just to say, this year in particular, in July, will signal a very important event, because South Africa will meet, as part of the strategic partnership with the EU, will meet for the first time with the EU Troika at summit level, and that will happen during the French presidency in July on the 25th. Then the fourth area would have been the fact that we are committed to strengthen our bilateral relations with all the countries of the North. Remember that our bilateral trade, source of foreign direct investment, most of overseas development assistance in South Africa today still relates to some of the major powers in the North. And therefore, as we indeed diversify our economy, looking at South-South cooperation, looking at the East, not to forget that in terms of the current reality, and it's actually a market that we want to protect at the same time, that a lot of this is going on with the countries of the North. Then there's going to be the issue of our participation in the global system of governance, and here, again, the work that will continue is a lot of the work that we've been doing, whether it's in WTO, on the economic side, reform of the Brettonwood institutions, and on the political side, the issues around the reform of the UN. Of course, there is a specific slant to this, and that specific slant relates to our membership as a non-permanent member of the Security Council. An area that in our stress plan features quite clearly now, that is an area that we want to give focus on, is the issue of climate change. Now, with respect to the specific issue of the Security Council, which is very important, early this year, we did a detailed review of our first year in the Security Council, and here we record some of the things that we think are very important for us, which were achievements. One is, I think we've asserted really our centrality and importance in the Security Council when it comes to the African issues. Secondly, during our presidency, we initiated the debate around the Chapter 8 institutions, particularly the relationship between the AU, Peace and Security, and the UN Security Council. Then there was the issue of women in peace and the issue of small arms that was beginning to be neglected. Then there's the issue around the security sector reform, the meeting that we had here together with Slovenia, Slovakia, which led to a report that we commissioned at the sitting of the AU this year. Members of this committee are aware of the work and the responsibility that we have with respect to Timor-Leste, and we are following on the implementation of some of the recommendations that came from that report. Then there's the issue of the Security Council subsidiary bodies around counterterrorism and the issues of weapons of mass destruction. Again, we're participating in all those. I think our assessment overall was that the main area of weakness for us has been probably in the area of communicating some of our policy positions. And that's an area that we will try to focus on a bit this year. We thought for the members we should just highlight that in the course of 2008, there are two important landmarks that are important for us. The first one is that our presidency is going to be in April this year, and during that presidency, we want to focus again on the issue of the Chapter 8, the strengthening of relations between the UN and the AU, to follow on the work that we started last year. This time the focus will be on the basis of formulating concrete recommendations based on the report of the Secretary General, which was actually a result of our last presidency of the Security Council. The second is just to indicate that in April, as part of that general focus on Chapter 8, there will be a specific sitting during our presidency of the AU Peace and Security Council with the United Nations Peace and Security Council. And that sitting, the arrangements currently are that it might be at a summit level. So I think that would be a major important issue. We've spoken previously about these areas where I say that maybe our communication was not strong, and particularly the issue of Myanmar and Iran were the main issues that we thought we should improve on in terms of communicating our policy positions. For 2008, the areas that we'll focus on that we think are more substantive, that the issue of Kosovo, we're in the process currently of finalizing a formal briefing to our cabinet. As you know, that our position was that we're trying to look and making an assessment before we finalize the national position. There's an important visit that's going to be taken by the Counterterrorism Committee in South Africa in the middle of this year. We've already facilitated a discussion in cabinet on this matter, and this is going to be a very important visit. And it will make an assessment of the state of readiness of South Africa to contribute broadly to counterterrorism. Then there's the issue of the renewal of the 1540 committee mandate, the issues of the Middle East, and those African countries in particular that are there, DRC, the issue of MONUC, Sudan, the issue of the hybrid force, and Western Sahara, the issue of self-determination. Now, again, these are issues that South Africa would like to play a prominent role in the course of this year. Then, of course, there's the work that we'll have to focus on again, particularly this year, which is the issues around disarmament, non-proliferation, and arms control. And here, this is make sure that we contribute to the ongoing discussion around the Iran and the DPRK-5. Secondly, to make sure that at all times we communicate a very balanced approach dealing with the issues of our commitment to non-proliferation, but at the same time making it very clear that we do not want any inadvertent introduction of the unnecessary barriers to peaceful exploitation of nuclear energy. So that is the issue. And of course, you know that our policy position is also side by side with the non-proliferation to argue strongly for the country, particularly the nuclear weapon states, to meet their international obligations with respect to disarmament. Now, we reported previously that there's important work that we're doing in the course of this last year. When we chaired the nuclear suppliers group, Abdul Mint is here, was doing that work. when we had the opportunity also to chair the General Conference in Vienna. So all that work, we believe that has been successfully executed, and the key challenge for us is to make sure that South Africa remains engaged in all these discussions. On the issue of the Middle East, I think the two important events for us really is two issues. First of all, to continue remaining engaged with what is happening in the Middle East, and try to not miss any opportunity to make sure that we sharpen our continued understanding of the challenges. And it is also in that context that we have agreed in South Africa to host, we agreed to a request by the Palestinian National Authority for their foreign minister to host the Africa-based ambassadors here in South Africa for a discussion. And we hope that they will give us an opportunity also to engage the leadership of Palestine so that we can understand in what form we can be of assistance there. We've participated, as we indicated, in all the initiatives, whether it was Annapolis or the Paris Donor Conference, and we believe that we'll be at the forefront of making sure that all these commitments made are honored. In the area of economic relations, I think we want to continue to strengthen our diplomatic presence. And I will come to some of these issues and come to the resource allocation because there are some challenges. Maybe let me make the point that we are doing two things simultaneously. One is to make sure that we expand our diplomatic presence. Secondly, in those areas where we already have a diplomatic presence, wanting to deepen this, particularly in the major economies, India and China. Now, there are some constraints that we're facing, and I'll come back to that, because the allocations that we have do not enable us to discharge all those responsibilities that we would want to have. But a key area of focus in the medium term, and again we spoke a bit about this last year when we met the committee, was really the greater focus on economic diplomacy, and that's work that's ongoing. Now, the main area of focus, it's quite clear to us in the area of economic diplomacy in particular, is that we're not going to register success unless we improve coordination within government. And not just at the national sphere, but all across all spheres. This is a task we've been given by Cabinet, and recently we just hosted a meeting of all the different spheres, working out on a systematic process of better coordination. And our Cabinet instructed us to use China as a test case for this coordination. Which then takes me to specifically the fact that over the next 3 years, and particularly this year, there's a lot of work that we'll be doing in our bilateral relations with China to leverage both current and future possibilities. Essentially, this work revolves around three issues. The first one, which is more for 2008, is to celebrate the 10 years of diplomatic relations. There is a very clear program, and we put it in this slide, that has got phase one, phase two, and phase three of that program for 2008. Now, it will culminate in a state visit in October 2008 by the President, but we hope the most important thing is that during that state visit we'll be able to sign an agreement with China which identifies product lines that South Africa wants to very aggressively push into the Chinese market with the agreement of China. And the idea being that let's identify those areas where we might have comparative advantage to sell and raise our level of exports into China in order to facilitate far much more balanced trade. On the other hand, the Chinese are also looking, particularly in the area of mineral beneficiation, areas of investment in South Africa so that investments can increase. You will recall that prior to the Standard Bank deal, we had more investment by South Africans into China than the opposite. Of course, the situation has changed a bit now. The second area is going to be our participation in the Shanghai Expo in 2010, and all the arrangements are ongoing for that. And the third area, which is the work around that was designed by the President, is really this work around identifying product lines, what we call the Partnership for Growth and Development. It's led by the DTI, and work is ongoing in that area. Now, we thought, honorable members, we should also just give you a sense of this extent then of our geographical reach, and which we are using as a platform then for this consolidating this diplomatic relations. again, in Africa now, that's where we are, 46 missions in 43 countries. You know that we want to be in all 52 other countries. In 2008-09, we'll focus on Liberia. The question may arise, are we moving with the speed that we would have wanted? No. Part of the problem we should come to on the budget is because we are not getting adequate funding for this area, and we'll come back to that. In Asia, we've got 18 missions. Yes, we want to open some missions. We want to have a trade mission, a consulate in Osaka. We want to open in New Zealand. But more importantly, in Asia, we want to consolidate our presence in China and in India, as I've indicated. Middle East, that's the representation. In Europe, that's the representation. And in the Americas, that's the representation. So our focus currently is really to try to look at Africa and to look at Asia in terms of our presence. Now, I'll come then to the East. So that broadly would be the area of focus in terms of our political agenda. Now, I'll go through the slides that give us a sense of the budget request and what constraints we see or possibility we see. The first slide, all that it shows, honorable members, the 205, 06, and 0607, these are based on audited statements, so this is what is our annual report. 207, 208 is the projected expenditure in terms of our estimation currently. The main message is that we've passed the phase where the Department of Foreign Affairs is understanding, and there's a consistent pattern now over the past 3 years. And which therefore means that we've reached a point where we really need, if we really want to consolidate and we want to further build on our international relations work, it's quite clear that the budget we have now can only do as much as we are doing now. And if we want to step up significantly, more resources are necessary. This next slide just shows the allocation in the medium term. You will notice that in 2009-10, and then 2010-11, there's a slight drop. There are three issues that account for that. I think the more fundamental one is that is the money that's put in there for the building of the Pan-African Parliament. And, of course, for 2009-10, there's a once-off expenditure that's built in that for the inauguration of the new President of the Republic. Now, we thought we should just indicate in the next slide some of the areas where we requested additional resources and what the response was during the process of resource allocation led by the Treasury. The very first one, you will see that we had wanted to increase capacity in missions in Asia and Africa. This is about the issue of India, China, New Zealand, Osaka, and also to increase the number of missions in Africa. Now, we asked for 74 million in that, and we're given 22, which obviously is going to slow that process. The consequence of that is that in Africa for the 2008-09, we are only going to open one additional mission, and that mission is going to be in Liberia. Then there's the issue of the foreign service dispensation. Foreign service dispensation, we ask for 68 million, we get 56 million. This is far much more to introduce the new system. Then there's an issue here which is a major source of concern for us, which is this line about strengthening of the department. We've now reached a point, and we'll come back to this point when we're talking about the vacancies in the department, where actually to carry on the operations of the department, we've been also assisted by the fact that we've been wiring funds that because of some of the vacancies that we have in order to carry out operations. With the size of by having filled some of these positions now, any person you bring in has an impact on the operational budget of the department. It's quite clear to us we need to significantly readjust our baseline for operational purposes. Otherwise, we run the risk of getting into a situation where we speed up filling the vacancies, but the people have got no money and instruments to work with because of the underfunding of the operational budget. So here we asked for 100 million for 2008-09. We did not get anything. Then there was the issue of the fact that we'll be chairing SADC. We had asked for 35 million. This was budgeted on the basis that we'll have to host a summit. We'll have to host two ministerial. We have to host meetings of the organ. And we have to also host meetings of specialized committees. We got 18 million of that instead of 35. Diaspora has spoken about that has been funded. Then there's the issue of inflation adjustment, which I'll come back to. In the African Renaissance Fund, we asked for an additional $200 million because of our assessment of the areas where South Africa needs to be involved in, and we got $83 million of that. And then, of course, there's the issue of Washington. We asked for $70 million, we got $20 million. Now, in the case of Washington, basically what's happening is that a lot of missions, a lot of departments are stepping up their presence in some of the major capitals. And of course we have to house all of them, and that has got implications for the space. Now we own the chancellery in Washington. What we needed to do is to expand the chancellery. And we needed this money to begin that process of doing that. And of course, if the money is not given, it means we are going to slow down that process with all the attempts. So up to this point, we feel that overall, compared to what we would have wanted to do, we are sitting with overall a deficit of about $341 million that we asked for and we could not get. And I'll come back to the issue of the exchange rate adjustment to the baseline later so that I do not confuse the issue. Now, the next series of slides, just a few slides, are some of those slides that I was talking about, honorable members, that I have not sent to you in advance, but these are the slides that essentially just to say, for the 08-09 process, we've, of course, based on our threat plan, we've had discussions in the department. This is the proposed allocation that we will be doing. So for program one, we will have about $897 million, and of that, our capital expenditure will be about $356 million. And then I'll talk a bit about the elements of that when we come to the next slide. Then in the case of Americas and Europe, our total budget for Americas and Europe is about $917 million. You will see in each of these, whether it's Americas, we indicate how much is going to be spent at head office. In the case of Americas, it's $24 million to maintain the head office staff and facilitate the operations. $266 million will be the missions. By far, you will see that this is the, which is basically program two, the money that we're spending in our missions is the biggest chunk of our resources, and you'll see a lot of this money spent in the mission. The next slide deals with our multilateral, both the multilateral in Geneva and New York, as well as Africa multilateral, and that is the allocation. We'll deal with whatever questions about MICA. And then this is the allocation to Africa bilateral, $629 million, and Asia, $437 million. Now, then there are other allocations that I would really like to highlight. For example, money for Africa-Asia Strategic Partnership, the $145 million I was referring to, which is basically the Pan-African Parliament building, money for rentals of the UN, the buildings for the UN system, and then also money for the Foreign Services Foundation. Then we've got spending transfers that are basically linked to our membership of international organizations, and basically we've listed all of them there. For example, our contribution to the AU in 08-09 will be $152 million, which is constitutes about 15% of the budget of the AU. And there are five countries, as you know, that contribute the same amount, 15%. It's South Africa, it's Algeria, it's Egypt, it's Nigeria, and it's Libya. Those five countries each contribute that same amount. The others are that we will deal with whatever questions may arise related to the other. And again, the next slide just continues some of those contributions. And the last point that we really would like to make that is basically to raise the point that I've made that the non-granting of some of these allocations we believe is going to impact negatively on the department. It's holding us back from some of the things that we'd like to do, and we believe we've got the capacity from a human resource angle to deal with. Particularly would raise the issue of about the $100 million to strengthen, to improve the operations of the department. This is something we have to deal with moving forward. The next area that we thought we should talk about here, because in terms of the PFMA, we are expected in addition to put in a strategic plan. That strategic plan is legislated, must have something on asset management, must have something on human resource management, must have also an ICT strategic plan. Now, in the case of properties, we've already indicated that we've got about $356 million for this. The two things that we wanted to bring to your attention is really the improvement of our organizational structure, first of all, and we elaborate on the reasons for that within the strat plan. Basically, having taken the decision to acquire as much properties as possible, then it means we must have, from a facilities management point of view, the capacity head office to do that. And that is where we've dealt with that. There's the important project that we hope to complete in the course of this financial year. Honorable members have visited the site of our new head office building. That's a major project that should be completed by March 2009. There are two issues that we have been dealing with respect to that project at an operational level. The first one is that there has been some delay with actual finalization of the PPP agreement. However, that does not worry us because late last year, as we explained to the honorable members when we visited the site, we decided to get into an early works program. But of course, the early works program has meant that we must be in direct, in frequent communication with the treasurer, which on this issue has been extremely helpful in making sure that it allows us to fund basically the early works program. In the area of asset management, one of the areas, honorable members, you will recall that most of the departments that received qualified audit for the 06-07 financial year, it was around this issue of asset management, and the Auditor General is paying a lot of attention on this. And quite clearly in the department, we've tried to elaborate a very clear strategy to deal with this, which is around making sure the documentation of our properties, our vehicles, and all the other movable assets that we have. Just to say, when it comes to property acquisition, we took a management decision that we will prioritize on the basis of the first bullet on the slide, which is essentially that we want all the P5 countries, all the G8 countries, we want the countries where we have multilateral organizations, whether it's in Vienna, Geneva, Addis Ababa, or New York. Then we want to make sure that we prioritize owning properties in all the southern countries and other African countries which are our strategic partners. And we thought also the emerging powers, the emerging powers, particularly in the south, India and Brazil, China and those sorts of countries. And in terms of our detailed program of what property we want to acquire, what it is that will be maintaining for 2008, 09, 09, 10, 10, 11, it's all put, and I've indicated the relevant places within the strategic plan, which is where the information is. A key area that members have been raised with us before, two issues. One is the maintenance of the state-owned properties, making sure that they are maintained. And again, if you look at that asset management plan, you will see different categories, and each year we stipulate very clearly which properties are going to get into the maintenance schedule for that particular year. And on the disposal, 08-09, we have ongoing discussions with the public works. I think we are trying to clear some of the areas of contestations that were there with public works, and we've got a common resolve. There's a team that's working to make sure that all the assets that we have now can be disposed of in 08-09. There's been some areas that were not clear in terms of the legislation on this issue. Now, the Auditor General expects that by March 2008, all assets, not only should you have completed an asset register, but all assets should have been evaluated. Now, in the case of foreign affairs, we've had discussion with the Treasurer and Auditor General because it has turned out to be extremely costly, and also it will take a bit of time, especially if one should do it urgently, this issue of costing all our assets. And so we've developed, with the concurrence of Treasury and the Auditor General, a three-year plan to deal with that. But for 08-09, what we'll be focusing on is making sure that all the buildings are completed, and secondly,
there are some high value items, like for example paintings that are in some of our missions that already are in the asset register, but what we want to do now is to make sure that we get the proper evaluation. Again, the problem with these things is that they need professional evaluators so that we can know exactly what it is that we have. And there's the rest of the program that is contained in that 3-year strategic plan. On the ICT, I will not spend a lot of time on the members because we've previously given you a very detailed briefing, which is really around the issue of revamping our IT system. We've had some delays. Some of the delays have been to do with the private partner that we're working with, Dye Data and the other companies, us having to quality assure before they progress on some of the work because we've picked up some elements of probably a bit of sloppiness in certain elements of the work. But I must say Dye Data has been very cooperative in terms of making sure that when we identify those. But the second issue is that for two successive years, the money that we've asked for to deal with this ICT program has not been given to us. So what we've had to do all the time is to keep on managing the pace of how we roll out the program so that we can see whether there are savings within the department so that we can fund activities related to this because it's very important to us. And again, I say in pages 64 and 65 of the strategic plan, there are more detail about what we are doing in this area. Another area that we'll be focusing on in the next 3 years is really the improvement of our consular system, and there are all sorts of initiatives that we have started. We've just recently in the middle of completing a process whereby we've called all the consular officials by region for a detailed training program in order to implement these new initiatives that we have. Part of this has to do with really the increasing frequency of South Africans out of the country who sometimes get themselves on the wrong side of the law where they are, but in certain cases caught up in unfortunate incidents and therefore South Africa having an obligation. So just to give an example, and in some of these, of course, we have to partner with other countries. And what we want to improve is the speed with which we can respond. When we had problems, for example, when there were problems in Lebanon, we had somewhere in the region of 40 South Africans who needed to be airlifted out of there. When we had problems in charge, we had South Africans who were there. So our capacity to be able to respond to that needed to be augmented, and we're working on that. Then there's the issue of the vetting of officials and the implementation and adherence by the department of the minimum information security standards. And again, this is where that we're paying a lot of attention to. If there is any delay, it is largely because of capacity constraints on the side of our intelligence services, because currently our vetting is done through NIA. NIA has agreed that Department of Foreign Affairs allowed us to employ vetting officers, but those vetting officers do preliminary work. The final certificate for vetting has to be issued by NIA. Now, NIA's capacity has been limited. And that has an impact really on the speed with which we can. But what we're trying to do is to make sure that every official in the Department of Foreign Affairs has got a clean security status. The last area I want to deal with very briefly, honorable members, is really around the organizational issues in the department. Now, one of the decisions that we've taken is to separate the training institute, the FSI, and have it led at a DDG level, and have human capital led also at a DDG level. And members would have probably been conscious of some of advertisements that we've made in that respect. And part of what has been driving this is that it's become clear to us, as we did a strategic reevaluation of what Foreign Affairs needs to do. This is a department that depends a lot on the quality of the people that you have. So both from a management point of view and also from a training point of view, we needed to beef up our capacity to do that. And particularly, apart from the people that we've employed here in South Africa, when about 2,200 or so, we've got 3,000 locally recruited people in all these areas where we are, who are foreign citizens. Now, we have, in our assessment, found that we have actually not been paying as much attention to the career development of those individuals, and also just to make sure that the systems around the employment are kept up to date. So That's why we are projecting this figure of 5,200, because from a mindset point of view, that is the total number of people that we need to at all times be conscious. And therefore, our organization needs to be designed to be able to handle that volume of work. This slide just gives us a bit of the separation of the functions. It deals with in greater detail in the strategic plan document. This next slide just gives you a sense of what the vacancy levels are, and it also shows the progress that was registered in 07. The point I was making earlier is that, yes, we may have this funded vacancy, but this funded vacancy is what has been cushioning us all along in terms of our operational budget. Now, this year we've already sent out an advert and we've started the process of selection. We're trying to bring in 350 more people into the department. And the reason we can do that is because we're hoping that by March next year we'll be in new buildings. So one of the major constraints that we've had, which is the physical capacity, because we've been working in different facilities and we did not have enough space, will be corrected. The key issue now is how to make sure that those individuals then are fully operational, which is why we're raising this issue about our operational budget. But that's an area that we'll focus on. This unemployment equity table, the picture has not changed to what we've generally reported to the committee. Good progress on the gender, on the improvement on the gender parity side. 33% of women in management position. Of course, now the new target is to reach gender parity, which is what we're working on. The department still is having major difficulties with the recruitment of people with disabilities. And we are finding also major challenges because, as I reported previously, we took a bold move of making sure that we open up career prospects for people with disabilities in the department and carefully chosen some missions overseas where they could perform. But even with that careful selection, it's quite clear that this is something that requires enormous resources and support for it to be. But nevertheless, we are going down that road. This is again just the equity slide, but put on the basis of the levels in the department. One area that I thought I should just mention is the issue of the organizational survey, culture survey in the department. We reported last year that we were doing this culture survey. We tried to improve the general working environment in the department, try to get a sense of what the areas of concern and what is the feeling of the people in the department about the department. Now, we've completed that work and we're now in the process of actual implementation of the recommendations that have come out from that. And this has been very detailed work that has gone on, not just at an organizational level, but at each of the branches and units within the department, dialogue facilitated by human resources units, so that we can really try to understand. We make the point that increasingly the department has many generations of people. And because it has got many generations of people, it has to respond. We're finding that the department is increasingly getting younger. And of course, as we deal also with the issues about the gender parity, we're finding a lot of younger people are still at the level where they've got young children. And therefore, and even when we send them out of the country, there are all these challenges that are there that the department needs to be very responsive so that we don't have situations in the department that actually become an obstacle to the general direction that we want to move. We previously reported to the committee about the number of initiatives that we have started, the cadet program, about really trying to look at recruiting young people into the department. We have the second group now, and that program is going on well. We have also tried to spend a bit of time looking at what else we can improve to make sure that people stay in the department, which is around the area of talent management. One of the areas that we want to focus a bit on in the coming year is really to give certainty to individuals when they enter the organization, to have at least their first 5 years mapped up and very clear to them in terms of what, from the day one to year five, what is it that they can reasonably expect from the organization, so that their growth and what they'll be doing is not something that comes by chance and comes as a surprise. And also we can set clear benchmarks that they can also drive themselves to work towards. A part of what we've been trying to do, of course, is to try and make sure that the department is seen as positively by young people, in particular as an employer of choice. We reported to the committee previously the work that we're doing with the SABC outreach programs. The committee was raised the issues about whether we're targeting people from rural areas, and indeed we're doing that. So all that work is ongoing. Another area that we will spend a bit of time on is on the health and wellness area. What we are finding is that increasingly, probably also has to do with the changing profile of the people in the department. I think we cannot continue the way we are in terms of the support to our diplomats when they go abroad and when they come back. Some of them, it's the first time they are ever leaving South Africa. They are relatively young. They've got young families, there are issues of adjustment, and therefore are getting all sorts of difficulties. And so it's quite clear to us that our wellness unit needs to be significantly improved so that we can support people not only when they are here in Pretoria but also in the mission. The last area that I'll deal with is just to, as I said, we've now separated and created a DDG position for our training institute. And basically, based on some studies that we've done looking at other comparable institutes, like for example Brazil and India, we have now tried to align our research unit in the department far much more with the training institute and of course establishing the diplomatic academy. A few of these other points that speak far much more to the detail of that, but just for purpose of the committee, just to indicate that we've been very active in the establishment of a forum of African diplomatic institutions. Secondly, our programs, increasingly at the FSI, we're opening them up to further countries. And thirdly, that we will be starting an initiative now where the UN Training Institute, UNITA, is going to partner strongly with South Africa and have a significant presence in South Africa. It will be one of three developing countries. Currently, they only have a presence in Geneva, New York, and in Japan. And that, to us, is a very important thing because it will position our training institution not only to focus on training our diplomats, but to contribute positively to the preparation of African diplomats. I think with respect to our internal audit, I think all the things we can just say to the committee, all the things that we're expected to do, we've put in our program. And so far, the Auditor General has had a positive appraisal of the work of our internal audit unit. They've put a lot of reliance on the work done by our internal audit unit. And we think that with the measures that we're taking, we'll further strengthen that up. So I will not get into detail on that. Chairperson, I have to run to an end because I'm conscious that the members might want to raise some questions. But really, that is where we are. I think maybe just to make the final comment, to say that in terms of the work of the department, we think we're clear about what are the strategic areas of focus that we'll be focusing on. We think that the department is well positioned to meet all the requirements, whether it's in terms of the Public Service Act, the PFMA, also the expectations from the Auditor General, from an accountability point of view. And thirdly, we believe that the work that we've started on human resource capacity building, I think is gaining momentum, and I think institutionally the organization is better prepared, and some of the changes we're suggesting will enable us to improve both on the question of building capacity on a quantitative level, but also qualitatively. Fourthly, the issue that we've discussed, which I know that is a major issue of concern to the portfolio committee, of us speeding up the process of property acquisition abroad in a strategic, targeted manner. As I've indicated, we're proceeding with that. It's there in the asset plan. The only constraint that we have is basically the resources released by the Treasurer. And again, to conclude, the major constraint that we believe we wanted to also table and highlight is the fact that we see as a major threat now to us being able to escalate to the next level in terms of quality and the depth of our involvement in international relations. Two challenges. One is the issue of coordination within the government system generally, and that we've started dealing with that. But the second one, which is the issue around the resources, I think is an issue. It might be late for this current budget process, I do not know, but secondly, it will be something that we would be ready to open up to discuss with the committee so that we can try to see if there are weaknesses currently that we cannot achieve some of the get some of the resources that are necessary. That second, certainly as we prepare for the next budget process, that we can try to see if we can improve that. Otherwise, it will be a major constraint. And hopefully, we'll, by showing you those, that first slide which shows the levels of expenditure, that would put you at ease that the resources that have been allocated to the department have been utilized, and I'm sure we can say, and I think our audit will testify to that, that they have been spent efficiently and effectively. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Mayor, before probably we do that, DG, you know, the issue of the resource allocation. Last year we wrote to Treasury, and Treasury said to us that it started in the Minister's Council. Is it because our ministers are unable to argue their case convincingly? And we asked that the same question last year, whether as the department are we able to present our case convincingly, and he said to us, no, you've done your utmost. But when the Treasury responded to us, they said that, no, in fact, they are at the end of the chain. The process starts with the Minister's Council. Maybe we need to come back to that and look at that particular aspect. To say to what extent are we able to get that particular process right at the beginning to allocate sufficient resources to the department. Of course, taking into account the competing interests of the country. Honorable Mewa, Sibande, and Luchuli, and Masale.
Chair, I don't know if it will be a fair question to the DG because it is loaded with political considerations. I have two questions. One is the celebration, 10-year celebrations, 10 years of Chinese-South Africa relationships. Indeed, we should celebrate it. Now, what I'd like to raise here is in these 10 years of association, have we as a department taken the initiative to talk about, address the issue of human rights, negation of human rights in China itself? And the second question, which is equally loaded, our response to Chinese continued occupation of Tibet, what is, if any, what initiatives have we taken? The second question is again a loaded one.
Just the Honorable Sheila, as you leave, I just want, out of interest, is the DA not interested in the budget of the department? Because I don't see any member of the DA left here. And that's why you are leaving the budget presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Sheila.
Sorry to have to do that. I didn't say until the end of the evening presentation. Unfortunately, our leader spoke to us in the case of our next speaker.
Okay.
I was unaware of that until the last minute.
This is quite interesting. It's quite interesting. Honorable Ramgobind, sorry.
I'm almost certain the chairperson will never make a diplomat. The second question is again a tough one, but perhaps you might have a view on this. The question of the African Renaissance Fund with a potential move to have the name of the funds changed and the implications thereof. I don't know if these are fair questions to the DG, but I guess because he's also addressing policy issues, it might come within his brief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, allow me to start by commenting something and then I'll come to the question. DG, I think there was an issue which was raised by the Chairperson, and I wanted to raise something that in my comment. Of course, we are very concerned that in future we must be send, some documents in advance so that they can advance ourselves, so that we can be able to maybe discuss some of these issues. And then, so that we can be able to engage each other in an amicable way. And that thing mustn't be seen as if it is the view of the chairperson alone. It is us as a committee. And that appeal, that request is from us as a committee, not as chairperson alone. Then come to the question, did you, if you can assist us here, 2008 marks the last year of the country's holding of the non-permanent seat in the UN Security Council. Given the significance of this role. And then I think on what I wanted you to find out on the specific country's priorities in the UFN this year, and if maybe, because our role is ending in April, so there's this ongoing thing of AFRICON relating to that matter. And then what, if you can maybe guide us, that what are the achievements so far? And then also, was that matter discussed in the UN Security Council, or it was left like that? And then another question is that it seems that there is an increasing engagement in the SADC around the issue of economic integration and trade, as indicated in ongoing TFA negotiations with other regions and countries, as well as SADC on inter-regional economic relations. What has been the country's specific contribution towards enhancing that capacity? And then the last one, you've touched the issue of our, last two, the issue of, I wanted to find out, where are we doing enough for the people of Timor-Leste and people of Western Sahara? The last one is about the issue of G8, vice versa, G5, which is Mexico, Brazil, India, and South Africa, forgotten the last one. Because I don't know whether the big countries are undermining us in terms of this initiative of BRICSA, while at the other hand, we have our own initiative, which is IPSA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. DG, very specific question. I just want to know if Hamas will be represented at the meeting that you talked about on the Palestine that South Africa will host. I just heard you mention perhaps one representation. Is the how is the department handling that one now, of really approaching that there seems to be two Palestinian sites now that we need to deal with? The one at the West Bank and the other one at the Gaza Strip, which is really the legitimate government. So I just want to know there what's happening. Perhaps I could, I'm just asking, we have reduced the resources as we've been, talking all along. And we will be, I think you said that we will set up, we'll make our presence in Liberia as a country that we seem to have chosen amongst many, others. What lies behind that? Why is that, why is Liberia the chosen one against others perhaps that we're more familiar with? And then the other thing, the third question is on the issue of equity. DG, one still finds that the women feature at the bottom levels, and up there is really men. And I think we are concerned about that. I think that process, we need to see that it is really speeded up. What are the difficulties? What is impeding
you know, taking the women up to the, you know, to the top level. And just looking at that organizational page anyway, one sees that there isn't, you know, a column that says the percentage of men in totality and the percentage of females in totality, which creates a bit of a difficulty. We just have a breakdown. Yeah, so that's my... And then the other one, the last one, is... now, we concentrate very much on perhaps what I would call, you know, the third world countries regarding the issues of nuclear proliferation or nuclear, what they are doing in terms of their nuclear programs and so on. We don't really hear that the other countries that need to disarm are, in fact, you know, cutting down on the on nuclear on their nuclear armaments where they stand even at the moment. Never mind the you know proliferation. I just like to know why that is the you know why that is the case. Thank you.
Honorable Mashalena.
Thank you, Malashela. Chairperson, I must say from the outset that I think we need to agree as a committee. We are not going to do justice to the strat plan and the budget for today, or only today. That then we should find a way to also agree as to whether we can look at the program again next week and see if the department can come back. There are outstanding issues that were flagged and raised last year, particularly on the annual report. Well, if those things were done in my absence, then I withdraw. But I think we need to go an extra mile in that and piece off the strategic plan and the budget outside of today. That is one proposal that I'm making. Because, yeah, let me leave it at that. Did you go to page 71 of your strategy plan? You have an organogram, departmental structure. At least since I joined this portfolio committee, it's only today that I'm able to get the gist of what the department is all about. It helped. The issue that is on the structure, there's a chief director of public diplomacy. Why do you have that? Well, if the structure has anything to go by, why do you have that office in between the office of the minister and the deputy minister, not within the overall offices from the DG side? That's one aspect. There's again a question of the branch corporate services. One issue that I took issue still with last year. Why do you have the CFO being a corporate services, whatever? Why do you have a CFO also as a corporate office, whether it's chief director or not? Because I personally believe that those two offices should be separated. And at what level as well is the CFO? When I looked at your structure the other way around, there were chief directors, and so on and so forth. At what level is the CFO? So that I can also be able to understand the powers that he has in terms of reporting. As a head of these two branches, who does he directly report to? It also has an impact on the issue that the offices that he has will be able to make. Let's speak to the 100 million that you talked of earlier on. If I dozed off, my apology. But when you talked to the slide, that's on page 2, strengthening the department. You made mention of the violence that was done by the department. You flagged it. If you can speak to those violence in relation to the strengthening of the department itself, because I think they would be there would be an interesting element in relation to why do we have the flight as it is, 100 million that was never approved. To also make it simpler, you requested 100 million. Dissect that with the 100 million the department wanted to do there. That's what I'm saying. If I dozed off and you talk to that issue, I apologize. Dissect that. Talk to me about this is the 100 million that we wanted to get in doing A, B, C, D, E, F, G in terms of strengthening the department. But when I see there's a member of parliament being told that National Affairs Services can't give you money, I also want you to understand what were the reasons in relation to that wish as a DJ you put forth. Let me see. Yeah, those are the three aspects that I for now would want to talk to you about. Thank you.
I think it has been raised every time we deal with this budget, this matter gets raised, but it's not the first time that it has been raised. And maybe we need to get into the debate on it as to whether it makes sense for them to be above. Because it gives an impression that in fact the deputy minister's reports there when they go to the ministry, right from the DG, and the two deputy ministers and the DG, they report through that when they go to the ministry. It gives that particular impression. Maybe we need to put it somehow so that it can be indicated in the manner that we put the organizational diagram, that it's an arm rather than a line command. But also, DG, there are issues related to NIPAD. You've raised the fact that we put something like 30 million on NIPAD. And I'm aware that the committee is planning to have an engagement on NIPAD to look at NIPAD. Because we want to assess the its impact and its program as it stands now. Whether are we the only people that are contributing into keeping its nerve pumping, or are there other people that are contributing in it? What's the status of that secretariat? And whether to what extent has it been integrated in Addis Ababa, as far as that's concerned? The annual report raises the fact that you'll concentrate on issues of regional communities. Your annual report 2006-2007, where you deal with regional communities. And you have repeated that when it dealt with the fact that you were taking over SADC. And it dealt with the same aspect again when you dealt with the fact that we'll be building this closer relationship with the EU and so on. How do you bring all those things together, DG, when we appear to be disintegrating? When we appear to be disintegrating as a community because of the consideration that you are mentioning of the fact that given the economic weaknesses of other member states, they then tend to make certain decisions that in our view could be problematic. How then do you build these economic, regional economic entities when SADC is broken into five pieces from one community into five different entities? How do we do that? Are we not... backing on the moving tree, this integration. Are we not pushing something that only South Africa pronounced to be committed to it, and all other member states aren't committed to it? Because when it comes to their consideration, regional integration is the last thing, but they are prepared to sell their soul for the change that the EU can give. To what extent are we committed to that particular aspect? The other issue that you have raised, DG, relates to the issue of the youngness of the department. So the department is becoming young. We've been raising this issue. We were promised that some work has been done to deal specifically with the issue of spouses, young spouses that are being deployed. We want to to be informed as to how far is that particular level of preparation, what work has been put in place to deal with those particular issues. What has not been come out clearly also relates to the very same aspect of the organogram, public diplomacy. We have raised the weaknesses on communication. And we were told at some point that the department is doing some work, having learned from the UCT engagement of Nviso, we're doing something. But DG, it's over a year that we've been told that we're working on something. We're told the same thing in the budget vote, and we have been told the same thing again today. Are we going to arrive at some point at anything that is going to happen? Or is it a question of saying that we're working on something and nothing has been worked on? The other issue relates to the Palestinians, as Mamre Tuli raises. Palestinians went into elections, they elected the government. That government was frustrated because there was a blockade, and ultimately that government was dissolved. A new government was formed, which I regard it has not been elected because people who won elections are not in governance. Now, when you say to us that the foreign minister of Palestine is coming here, which foreign minister, the one that was elected or the one that was not elected? Because I understand that the government that was elected was actually frustrated. So which foreign minister is actually coming to speak to African diplomats in South Africa? We are hosting the ambassador of Palestine, I think, on the 19th of this month. We are hosting the ambassador of Palestine. And these are the questions that we want to place before him to say exactly what's the nature of governance. Is the outcome of elections subject to the approval of the powers, and therefore only when powers agree that they've won elections, irrespective of what the voters have done, is what we recognize as the government in that particular part of the world. Thank you, DG.
Thanks, Chairperson. When Honorable Mewa comes back, I will just ask, I didn't want to disrupt the flow of the question. I didn't pick up these questions on the African Renaissance Fund, but we'll deal with that when it comes back.
What you are asking is that what will be the implication of that there's a move to convert the African Renaissance Fund into a development fund. So what will be the process and the implication of that move?
Thanks very much. I'm going to let me just signal to my colleagues that we'll ask them to just prepare themselves to deal with some of the questions. I'll ask Abdul to probably deal with the issue on disarmament, the issue, and also if you could deal with the issues around Tibet and human rights in China. And maybe we'll do that last when the honorable member has come. I'll ask Solisa to just get ready to deal with the issues around the non-permanent seat, our assessment, and Solisa will just elaborate why we chose Liberia now. But I'll make some comment related to that, because it will indicate why it probably is more strategic. And Matthew, you will just handle the issue about our readiness with this issue about the young spouses, and then other colleagues will add in other issues. Let me just deal first with the organizational issues. And maybe before I deal with that, I don't want to belabor this point, and also I don't want to appear as if I'm very defensive on it. But let me preface it by apologizing that members of the committee, I'm sure the members will know that over the years we've tried our level best to respond as promptly as possible to issues that the committee has raised. And so there would not be any intention on our side to do anything that would want to limit the possibility of the committee.
But I really would like to stress that, as the chairperson pointed out, we did indeed table this third term, brought it to the committee on Tuesday last week. I do understand there were problems with circulation, but on the side of the department, we did it on time. Secondly, in the past, we have not sent the slides that are the base of our presentation in advance. We've normally tabled them here in the committee, but of course, this year we decided that we're going to do it a day before. Now, the committee can indicate to us improvements and all sorts of other ways that we would like us to do things. And what I can say is that we will do that because at the end of the day, our intention is that you should be able to discharge your responsibility. So to the extent that there may be misunderstandings, of course, we would apologize. And just to say, in the discussion I had with the chairperson and the pro some of these concerns, I did indicate that, of course, our task is to make sure that we facilitate your work. So to the extent that certain things cannot be done because of whatever problems have arisen, we would obviously respond when the committee would like to discuss again. Having said that, let me start with the chief directorate communication. Maybe as you put this in the structure, it gives the impression that the deputy ministers and the DG are reporting to him. But you'll recall that some time back, I was still in the Department of Health then, there was a task team that was put up by government called the Communications Task Team. It was led by Mandla Lang. And that task team was trying to respond at the time to the issues of focused communication by government. It made a number of recommendations. Two of the recommendations that have informed the way government functions were, first of all, a significant elevation of the positions of communicators and departments, and hence the decision that this should be a chief director level or above. The second issue was that the head of communication, by and large, communicates policy-related matters, and therefore the head of communication must be located in the office of the minister. So that was the decision, that was the recommendation of the COMTAS team, and that then got implemented. So I think what this slide was trying to do was to point that on a day-to-day, in terms of communication of policy, that is where the head of communication gets the guidance. But I think, of course, as you put it diagrammatically, it then creates the impression as if the deputy ministers are reporting, which is not the case, and I think we just need to see how on a diagram form it's done. The other thing that we've done, certainly in the department, and many departments have done that, because ministers would not spend a lot of time overseeing on the managerial side this head of communication. Managerially, the head of communication, in terms of his performance evaluation and also in terms of managing his management oversight over the people who report to him, the DG tends to directly oversee that. And that is what is happening in the department. So, as I say, we'll deal with that. The other structural issue is what's the level of the CFO? The level of the CFO is the DDG. Who does he report to? He reports directly to the DG. And the third issue, whether in fact it was advisable to link the CFO with the head of corporate services. Just to say, in terms of the evolution of the structure of the department, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when Mr. Apleni was the head of corporate services, you will recall that we had DDG Corporate Services, who acted as head of finance, oversee ICT, and oversaw human resources. And we concluded that indeed that's a very huge task. So what we have done, we've taken all the human resources related work out of corporate services. And hence I was making the point that we've created a DDG for the training institute and a DDG to deal with human capital management. The only reason we call him CFO and head of corporate service, and of course, in terms of the profile of the person, when we recruit somebody who can play the role of the CFO, it's only that managerially also oversees the IT in the department. And the reason we thought that it is better with him is because a lot of the audit-related issues that as a department we're dealing with the Auditor General, we saw that the custodian, the main interface between us and the Auditor General and the and the implementation of the provision of the PFMA should actually oversee that. Short of us creating another DDG just to look at ICT, which we have at the present time felt not appropriate. And of course, organizationally, we're also trying to limit the number of individuals reporting directly to the head of the department. So that's where we are. But it is our view that what we have done now is that we have put a CFO, the only other responsibility, hence the corporate services, the ICT, all other responsibilities have been taken out, and particularly human resources related responsibilities. The issue around if I may start with the whilst I'm on Mr. Malashela so that I can deal with the issues that he's raised. The 100 million environments and the deflecting how it's going to be used. As I indicated, the only reason we're able to maintain operations in 06-07, and I can tell you that to an extent that the only reason we've been able to do in the 07-08, but it will come out, is because in the 06-07, we wired about 67 million rand. 67 million rand from basically personnel in full discussion with the Treasury in order to support missions that were reaching a point where their budget, they could not carry out operations. So already at that time, it was quite clear to us that we're getting into that process. Now, we have further increased the number of positions that we have in the department. And our assessment, we saw it when we were doing the budget this year. Because after acquiring the money, now we've reached a point where, in fact, those positions have been filled. And we have to return the money back to those units because the individuals have now been employed. And it's been quite clear to us that we need additional resources. So the 100 million, really, it would be difficult now, and I can provide the information to split it, how much of it goes to Africa, how much goes to Asia, but it cuts across the department because these vacancies that have been funded have been right across the department. But all I can assure you is that that environment that was done in the 06-07 and the environment that was done in the 07-08 have been done in a manner that's fully compliant and also in full discussion with the Treasury. If I may deal with the issues around the further integration and also the questions that Honorable Sibanda raised with relates to Timor-Leste and Western Sahara. Let me say that with both those, for example, Jerry Matsila has just returned from Timor-Leste, hardly about 10 days or so ago. And the reason we've gone to Timor-Leste was to make a rapid on-the-spot assessment of the impact of the current difficulties that they are having there. Precisely for the same reason that we are trying to step up our own support to Timor-Leste. We are, of course, worried about the developments. We are worried about what has happened there. One of the areas that I did not mention when we were talking about capacity is that our embassy in Indonesia has made a recommendation that, as a principle, we've accepted, but it is implementation that is constrained now, again, because of the resource issue. In terms of our priorities, we would have wanted to have a micro-satellite mission in Timor-Leste so that we can begin to engage on a far much more regular basis with the activities in Timor-Leste. The second issue that we are trying to do is that there's a program and request that Timor-Leste has extended formally to us now in the course of the last visit. Of course, building on the discussion that took place during the elections, which as a department we are trying to progress. So I can't say we're doing enough, but all I can say is that we are really trying to follow up on the issue of Timor-Leste. The same applies to Western Sahara. Western Sahara, we have, through the African Renaissance Fund, worked with them to identify areas on the humanitarian side that we should support, and that we are doing. Then there's the other track, which is far much more the political track, which of course we are coordinating with them as best we can. We know all the constraints on that and all the obstacles that have been put in. But all I can say is that we're in regular dialogue with the Polisario on that. And as for the request that they've put to us, on issues that we should help them on the humanitarian side, we have allocated resources to do that. And those projects are ongoing. In fact, they were expanded in the course of last year. On the issue of product integration, now, I think maybe we should just recall that, first of all, South Africa was asked by the SADC country to contribute in the negotiations, on the EPA negotiations, even before South Africa formally joined. And that was in recognition of the capacity relatively that we had, and also our previous experience having negotiated with SADC. South Africa played that role. Later on, we took a conscious decision to join the EPA process. And of course, in the process of that, as the chairperson pointed out, we've found all sorts of experiences. We share some of the frustrations. We've had discussions on this. But the point that we've taken is that without being naive and pretending that we are not seeing some of the threats that exist to the unity and the cohesion of both SACU currently and SADC, because the problems of the EPAs have now penetrated right into SACU as opposed to just SADC. Without being naive, however, our point, and we discussed this extensively in our stress plan, we've discussed it in an interdepartmental forum that we had the BTI on. We called all our ambassadors in the region in January, and we had extensive discussion on this. Our view is that the first prize, nevertheless, is that South Africa must do everything possible to try and see what it is that we can do to maintain the cohesion and unity within SADC. Hence, in our stress plan, I raised the point that in addition to dealing with the issues about cohesion and issue of regional integration in the context of our meetings in the multilateral forum, we've taken a conscious decision that we need to, at the same time, open up stronger bilateral lines. And that's what we're trying to do. The issues around Palestine, the issue around Palestine, both Maltuli and Chairperson, of course are tricky. You would know that our position, our formal position, is that after the victory of Hamas, we made and we were very clear that particularly the developed countries could not call for democracy and then want to choose what outcomes of a democratic process that they elect to want to support. And we maintained at that point that it was incumbent upon the international community to find ways to interact with Hamas to the extent that Hamas had won in the elections of the Palestinian National Authority. And that is the position that we maintained. The issue, and of course in our regular interaction with the PLO, we maintained the same position to say it was incumbent on the PLO to find ways to work together with Hamas, and accept that now there has to be coexistence between President Abbas and the Hamas leadership. The things took a slightly different turn after the events of Gaza. Now, the position we took is that was not disturbed by the events that unfolded in Gaza. We also respected the fact that in the constitution of the Palestinian National Council and the PNA, it was permissible, it was allowed, it was provided for, that in the event of a situation similar to what happened, that in fact the president of the national authority, in this case President Abbas, could establish an interim government at the time of the failure of the unit, when the unity government collapsed. So there was nothing in our understanding of the legal framework that governs the Palestinians. There was nothing irregular in that decision. There was nothing illegal about that decision. Of course, we continued to advocate that the best possible solution is not a legalistic solution, is that between the different factions amongst Palestinians, they must try to reach out to each other. And of course, that government that was established at that point in time continued to exist and enjoys international recognition. So when you ask us which of the foreign ministers is the foreign minister of the government that was formed after the collapse of the interim government, It is not the Hamas foreign minister. It is not somebody who represents Hamas from Gaza. It is foreign minister of the administration and the authority in Palestine that is led by President Abbas. So that is the person who will be coming to South Africa. Now, that does not mean we are not advocating for continued dialogue between Hamas and the PLO. Now, in terms of that meeting itself, just to clarify that what is happening is that all that they have done is that they want to consult their ambassadors. Brazil, for example, is hosting them in South America. They have approached us that they would like to meet the African ambassadors because of the resource constraints that they have. They would want us to actually facilitate and support their hosting that meeting. In any event, we've been, year after year, probably for three consecutive years, been hosting the UN Committee on Palestine. So there would be nothing inconsistent in our actions with the ongoing support that we're giving to the Palestinian National Authority. And that is the basis that we agreed. And of course, we thought it would provide us an opportunity also to engage with the leadership of Palestine. Now, the lines of communications and all the other policy positions that South Africa has with respect to Hamas and PLO and the need for them to work together still remain. And we have never, South Africa has never taken a position of identifying with a deliberate exclusion of Hamas or non-contact with Hamas as a policy position as many countries are taking because of whatever position. So that is where we are on the issue. Now, the issue, Chairperson, of the 30 million on NEPAD, I'll ask Abdul to probably talk a bit about the how far the integration process and then also the brainstorming session that might be coming on Hamas. Honorable Mayor, the African Renaissance Fund, there's a discussion we're having with the Treasury, there's a team that has been working, not even immediately post Polokwane when the decision was taken, but as soon as before the policy conference, we'll recall that there were two issues that came out before the policy conference. And one of them was the possibility of South Africa identifying a certain percentage of our GDP for direct development assistance. And it was in the discussion document. So at that point in time, there had been a discussion between Treasury and Foreign Affairs about how do we structure better support to the continent. Well, for the African Renaissance Fund, Treasury has been worried about the fact that different departments also do a lot of work in the continent, and they fund it through their regular budget. And so South Africa does not have a composite sense of how much we're spending. So the essence of that discussion is not been completed around what the balance is going to be, but there's an inclination on our side that whatever route South Africa follows, we must not remove the possibility of us to have a budget line that enables us to respond urgently. Because sometimes the main focus of the development fund is far much more long-term planning to look at things that need to be supported, not just in the short term, but in the immediate and the longer term. But we know, especially on the peace and resolution side, there are so many things that erupt at short notice, and that our CAPA and African Renaissance Fund has enabled us to do that. Now, whether the two will coexist and probably the ARF reduced and more money be put on the development fund and who administers that, those things have not been clear yet, but we are conscious of the fact that there needs to be a synergy between the two. Maybe the last question I'll deal with on your side, Honorable Subanda, was the issue of the BRIC and the IFSA. I think this is a development on our side that we're watching very closely. We're watching it very closely for the simple reason that currently in the configuration of BRIC, South Africa is not in. And two of our partners in IFSA, India and Brazil, are going to be part of that, of BRIC. Of course, they'll be joined by Russia and China. And I don't think it's not so much us, because we can't impose us into a configuration when there are discussions going on in that configuration. But I think both India and Brazil are conscious of the fact that there is IFSA that's already standing, and I think there's a discussion that's going on as to whether to what extent BRIC will remain
an informal coming together, or it will be formal institutionalized. And I think there's a meeting of the BRIC countries now in April, if I'm not mistaken, where they will be pondering over those issues. But as I understand, both Brazil and India have discussed with us about it. And of course, our view would be that we would not want to have anything that is going to undermine now the momentum that is beginning to be gained by IFA, especially if you consider that our conception all the time was that the current configuration of IFSA is not going to be static. That is not the end point, but it was these countries coming together to start a process that will expand over time. And of course, the issue of engagement with China has always been on the cards. So that's where we are on the issue. But I would like to just hand over then to my other colleagues to deal with the other questions. But maybe, Maltuli, let me just make one point. As Mxolisi deals with the issue of Liberia, just to remember that, so you'll add if there's one question, country I've forgotten, but my recollection is that in the African continent now, the only country, so when we talk about opening in Liberia, we're talking about opening in the context of other countries where we don't have missions. And the only other countries is Liberia, Sierra Leone, Cape Verde, Djibouti, Somalia, Togo, Seychelles, and Western Sahara. Those are the countries, I'm not sure which one else, but Nicholas can give you maybe some explanation why Liberia was a better option for us compared to the others to move on. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Director General, and thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. Yes, indeed, the Director General is correct. Those are the countries which you take a global view of Africa. Those are the only countries, and maybe I will include Central African Republic. Those are the only countries where South Africa is not currently represented. But as you know, we do have non-residential accreditation to all those countries. Now, when we looked at the continent, we realize that of all those countries, it's only in Liberia, which is part of the Manu River basin, and also, as you know, which is on a post-conflict reconstruction mode. It's only in Liberia where it would make more strategic sense for us to be represented. If you look at the other countries, they are still faced with major challenges. And we thought that if we were present in Monrovia, we'd also be able to deal with Freetown, Sierra Leone. And we would relieve the burden on our ambassador in Abidjan, who has been having multiple accreditations ever since his assumption of duty in Abidjan. As you know, he was also accredited to Burkina Faso, to Niger, and to Togo. And now we've since opened in Burkina Faso. And indeed, we'll be opening in the next couple of days in Niamey, in Niger. We've just deployed officials who are going to set up our mission in Niger. Now, if you take those out of his accreditation, he'll only be left with Liberia and Sierra Leone. But if we do open in Liberia, he will then, or whoever comes in as his successor, will then have to focus on Ivory Coast. And as you know, Ivory Coast is also emerging out of a conflict situation. And indeed, is the progress with regards to the implementation of the Ouagadougou Agreement proceeds. There's certainly relations between ourselves and Ivory Coast will have to be normalized. And that will require that our ambassador and our diplomat based in Ivory Coast focus has suffered since the onset of the crisis in Ivory Coast. Now, the other consideration with respect to Monrovia, as you know, Liberia itself is measured out of a cycle of violence and conflict, which lasted over a dozen of years. And with President Felix Johnson and the cabinet administration in general making efforts to ensure that the sustained stability and peace, growth and prosperity in that country, we thought it's important that we should have a presence on the ground in Monrovia. More so that we played also a key role in ensuring that Liberia makes breaks with their past, which has been characterized by violence and instability. So those are the main reasons which made us to opt for Liberia for this year. We're not saying the others are not important, but if you have to prioritize the strategic importance and also look at where our foreign policy stands to have greater impact. We thought that it would be in our presence in Monrovia.
Thank you, Chair. DG and honorable members, the first question, I think, which was said, it would be provocative with regard to China. Well, it's complicated, at least, to discuss human rights issues, issues of Tibet, and indeed often also of Taiwan relations with China. But the question was whether we raise these issues. We've been raising these issues in our normal bilateral and other contacts, but as you know, they consider that the territory of Tibet is Chinese territory. So there is no dramatic change that we can actually report, but it's an ongoing process. I'm sure in the continued interaction it will continue with that. Chair, with regard to the question of nuclear non-proliferation and the nuclear weapon states and their stance, I mean, you're absolutely right, literally, but the danger is that they're now going two stages further, the nuclear weapon states. For the first time, they're no longer talking about deterrence. They're talking of actual use of nuclear weapons if they are faced with chemical, biological, and in one case, there was even one head of state who said with terrorist threats. So that makes for a completely different scenario and more dangerous. And of course, they're also developing new weapons for this actual use. So there's no political will on their part to honor the NPT commitment to get rid of nuclear weapons. However, on the other side, there are some developments that are encouraging. One is that last year in January, the former Secretary George Shultz, who was under Reagan, the U.S. Secretary of State, and Senator Sam Nunn, who was a very powerful member in the Congress, they have got together with Kissinger, and they did an op-ed, as they call it, in the Wall Street Journal in January last year, to say that maybe no country needs nuclear weapons. They feel it's extremely dangerous. So we've also been teaming up with some of these organizations in the U.S., the Nuclear Threat Initiative and others, which are hosting the structure. And in January this year, they made a second statement. And in that period, they got about 40 or 50 people who've all been serving officials in the security framework in the United States. So they're not in power now, but they're people who were in power before. And just last month in February, the Norwegians hosted a conference, especially on nuclear disarmament, because they've hosted many on other subjects, and we've been criticizing them. So Schultz and Nunn and people came to that conference. They invited us, and I also attended that. So we did focus on this issue, that really what they have to get rid of nuclear weapons as such. The encouraging thing from the UK side is that when they renewed the Trident missile system, and we made a statement opposing that, saying it was an opportunity for them to have implemented the NPT, there was considerable protest amongst Labour MPs and others in the Parliament. They also linked up with us, got our statements and so on, And then again in February was the 50th anniversary of CND in Britain. And when I was traveling, they had invited me, so I participated in that with Ken Livingstone. So there is a movement there against it. And the present government, where Prime Minister Brown has stated that they need to look again at whether nuclear weapons are necessary. So it's only that far. But they've made one interesting arrangement which we've not seen before, is that the UK and the Norwegian government are now cooperating with their technical people to say that they want to look at the technical problems of actually dismantling weapons. If we are cynical, we would say those who've made weapons know how to dismantle them, so they don't need to talk with another government and their institutions as to how to do it. But this is one process. The other is that after the 1995 and 2000 NPT review meetings, where we won major advances, where the nuclear weapons said that they were committed to disarmament, then they reversed their position after 2000. So we had a deadlock at the 2005 review conference because the nuclear weapon states withdrew their original commitment. Well, the UK now is saying that they're coming back to adhere to that commitment. So in international forums where they have said it, we've welcomed that and we've said we hope other countries will do the same. But the test will come in the 2010 review meeting of the NPT. And that will be just soon after the new administration will have taken over in the US. So we are wondering what will happen there. But we are also keeping in touch with academic institutions and others in the United States where advisors of the Democratic candidates and others are also interacting. So in that forum, in the last 2 years, we've distributed quite a lot of our statements and positions, and at least it's producing some kind of response in terms of our debate and discussion. So those are the small little changes that have taken place. But we are, as our policy forum, of course, absolutely pushing this issue, because without this, the whole NPT will lose its credibility if they don't move to disarmament. Then, Chair, just to return to the NEPAC thing, the $30 million budget includes $10 million that we give to the African peer review mechanism. And as honorable members will know, that process is accelerating, and really a number of countries are completing their reviews, and the peers are reviewing those reports. We were, up to last year, contributing most of the Secretariat's funds, but at the summit that was just concluded now, the others contributed, and Nigeria pledged, Algeria, Mozambique, Rwanda, Ghana, just to name some that I recall. So I think that if these pledges are now kept to, then at least the current year's budget of the NEPAD Secretariat is assured. We continue, of course, with our original commitment of the $30 million that the Director General had mentioned. But as I said, part of it is also what we give to the peer review mechanism. With regard to integration, there is quite a bit of confusion as to what is meant. Of course, one of the processes, and that the NEPAD Secretariat has successfully done with the AU already, is to ensure that those areas the AU works on and we work on in NEPAD, we should transfer to the AU where it's doing it efficiently. And so the whole peace and security area is actually effectively already integrated into the AU. There's very little discussion in the NEPAD structures on peace and security issues. Members may recall that when NEPAD was set up, this was the specific responsibility of South Africa and President Mbeki on the peace and security issues. So they've gone from NEPAD to the AU as those commissioners become active. And so too in a number of areas in agriculture and so on, where we find that there are actual AU projects or AU work in progress, that is going to the AU in that sense. But there is also now, in the last year, a great deal of coordination between NEPAD and the AU. And now the AU commissioners also attend the NEPAD steering committee meetings. Indeed, we're having one starting on Sunday in South Africa for 3 days of the steering committee. Now, the DG referred to the brainstorming session that has been postponed several times. But it looks now as if it would be possible for the heads of states to have this brainstorming session where they were going to review the 5 years of NEPAD and where we go in future. And President Watt has offered to host this meeting, and we just heard now that they are suggesting some date in April, so it may be that that meeting will take place. When that meeting takes place, then some of the integration issues will also be discussed there. There were subcommittees set up to discuss integration. Those subcommittees have reported but it was felt that they had to go through this brainstorming session before the AU itself accepts it. So if those ideas are accepted by the brainstorming session or whatever other proposals they put forward, that will then go to the summit of the AU itself, and then, of course, people will act on it. So that I thought maybe we just say that Nepal is in much better health in terms of the administrative side. Many of the projects are also working well because we've gone over the phase of advocacy for Nepal and now in implementation. And if the committee wishes to, we can certainly send a detailed list of it. What we are doing is we're having problems with our partners in the OECD countries in terms of their accountability. And the next meeting, which will be in Japan around Jakarta, we are planning from the Nepal side that we will give them the African Action Plan, which is the African plan. And then they must tell us what part of it they wish to support and superimpose that, and then we have a constant matrix on which we can see progress made on the basis of the African blueprint. Of course, they want to say that they are not committed to the African plan as such, and we say, well, they don't need to be committed to the plan, but that is our plan. And in terms of their projects, they need to list it with regard to that. So in all this, we're also cooperating with the African Development Bank and other African partners as well in order to advance these structures. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Shepherdson. Just to elaborate in answering the question about our achievements on the points that the DG has made around maybe three areas. Firstly, our assessment of our first year in the Security Council shows us that we have managed to leverage the seat in the Security Council to advance on some of the areas that are already priorities in our foreign policy, mainly the issue of the consolidation of the African agenda. As you will recall, the Security Council, more than 60% of its work is basically focused on Africa. There's about 12 African countries that are on the agenda of the Security Council. So the interesting thing is that in most of those situations, South Africa was already involved in one way or the other, either bilaterally or in the context of the AU. We were already involved in peacemaking with those countries even before we joined the Security Council. So by being in the Security Council, therefore, we were able to advance on those specific areas. And I think because we were already involved in these areas, our voice has carried weight, whether we're dealing with the DRC or Sudan or Cote d'Ivoire. Members of the Security Council, including the permanent members, they want to listen to South Africa to know what our views, what our thinking is in terms of the movement forward. One of the anomalies in the way that the Security Council works is the fact that even though these are African situations and there are always three African members in the Security Council, you find that the leadership in these areas, that is before we came into the Security Council, is invariably a leadership by the permanent members. For example, any initiative in the Security Council on Sudan will come from the United Kingdom. Any initiative in the Security Council in Somalia will come from the United States. So there are those anomalies in the way that the Security Council works. But we have been able during the past year to play a much more enhanced role bringing in the African voice and the African concerns in on these areas. The other area that the DG mentioned, which I can just elaborate on, is the fact that last year we managed also to play a co-leadership role when the Security Council visited three African countries. The total visit was to five countries, but we were co-leaders only to the visit to Ghana, to Addis Ababa, and to Sudan. Now, it might seem, again, to be a straightforward matter, but in the Security Council, it is not straightforward. Never before has an African member of the Security Council played such a leadership role in these visits of the Security Council. The important thing about that is that when you are a leader, you basically set the terms of reference of the visit in terms of what is it that the Security Council wants to achieve during a particular visit. So we were able to do that, and this brings me to the second broad area of our focus and which we see as an achievement. And this is the issue which the DG mentioned about our advancing the idea of the enhancement of the relationship between the AU and the UN, in particular the Security Council, and the PSC. Again, yeah, we took a conscious decision before we joined the Security Council that one of the things that we were going to do was to actually consciously advance AU decisions within the Security Council. The agenda of the AU Peace and Security Council and the UN Security Council overlaps, but we find a situation where there is sometimes contradictions between the decisions that the AU Peace and Security Council takes. For example, take the issue of Somalia, which is on the agenda of both. The AU will take a particular decision, but we find that the Security Council itself does not find it in its sense to follow up with and take a similar decision. There are always contestations. I mean, these are natural contestations in the conduct of international relations, because you must remember that on all the issues that are on the agenda of the Security Council, some of the big powers actually have direct bilateral interests, whether it is the DRC or Burundi or Sudan. I mean, there are always contestations. So it's not straightforward, therefore, that when you have an AU decision, it will automatically be endorsed by the Security Council. But we've taken this on our shoulders to say we will consciously be advancing this, and that's why we have this particular initiative of then enhancing this cooperation between the UN and the AU. So what happened last year in March when South Africa was the president is that the Security Council requested, as part of our initiative, the UN Secretary General to produce a report that was actually going to come up with new proposals of how this relationship can be enhanced at a number of different levels. And this is a report that is going to be the focus of the discussions during April, when in April now we will be having our second presidency of the Security Council. So this report, we hope, is going to come up with proposals on a wide array of areas. Looking at mediation, for example, how can the two organizations work together to advance mediation as part of peacemaking? The use of resources, how can the UN collaborate with regional organizations, in particular the AU, on the issue of resources? Part of the difficulties that the AU has been in this area of mobilization of resources for its peacemaking initiatives. So this report will therefore cover this wide scope, and it will be the focus of our presidency. During March, there will be this meeting at a high level on the 17th, where we hope that the Security Council can discuss this issue based on the report of the Secretary General. And then we hope that the Security Council can then take decisions, concrete decisions, on this area. We don't yet have all the details as of now in terms of the, because that will depend largely on some of the recommendations that will be provided in the Security Council by the report of the Secretary General. So those are some of the three broad areas that we characterize as our achievements. There are the other initiatives that the DG mentioned that we did take. For example, based on the issue of the role of women in peace and security, it's an issue that is very important for South Africa. We've advanced it in the Security Council, and we continue to work on that until December 2008, when our membership of the Security Council ends. Security sector reform is an area where, again, in the global debate, when you talk about security sector reform, although all the experiments, the majority of the experiments on security sector reform, whether they are the successes or failures, the majority of those have been drawn from the African continent. South Africa itself is one of the countries that has always helped and has been had a very good process of security sector reform. There are other countries in Africa where security sector reform has not happened. But whenever there are global debates on this area, we find that the African voice is lacking. Hence, again, we took this initiative by hosting the workshop in Cape Town last year to actually see how can we enhance and increase the voice of Africa so that Africa, based on our own experiences, were able to inform the global debate on security sector reform. So as a result of that, the AU summit this year in January then took a decision that the AU Commission must elaborate its own policy, that is an AU policy framework for security sector reform. And we hope that this will also be able to interface with the discussions that are taking place at the UN in this area. So in a nutshell, Chairperson and DG, these are some of the areas that we think have been concrete achievements for during the first year of our membership. And as I said, we continue to work on some of these areas. Just to add on the issue of Western Sahara, what the teacher said, I mean, it's one of the areas that will come up during our presidency of the Security Council. And there have been now three rounds of direct negotiations between Polisario and Morocco. And the fourth round will be taking place now in March. And one of the things that we are doing in preparation for our presidency, when this issue is again going to come up, there will be a visit to South Africa by the negotiators of Polisario to engage with South Africa from their experience. I mean, I'm sure they will also be able to share with us their own perspectives of how the Security Council needs to move further in this area. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, DG. Honorable members, good afternoon. Chairperson, the issue of spouses, program for spouses, we have done some work in that area, and I'll just give you a sense of some of the things that we have since implemented. The first has to do with what we call counseling for, as much as it's not focused on the spouses, but it's focusing on the entire family. So the entire family, including the children that are within the family, we provide compulsory briefing for the family before they go, but also when they come back. We have found when we write letters to, particularly when they come back, when we write letters to them, addressing them individually to say, we know you're coming back on this date, we would like to engage with you. It doesn't mean there are problems, but we'd like you to go or to come through and meet with us. And there's been quite a good response towards that. And those that have gone, we are beginning to receive letters from colleagues that have gone to say what they've gone through, the counseling that they received before has been quite useful to help them settle in there. We also have a specialized workshop on culture shock that we insist that spouses go through when they go through training at the Foreign Service Institute. So there's a special program addressing culture shock. Then during those two, we also encourage them that should there be issues that they then want to come to us for specific counseling, that they are more than welcome to do so. In fact, we encourage them to then initiate that individual counseling if they need it. As it is, this coming Friday, we are having a workshop where we have requested people that have come back, that is previous spouses, to come and assist us to develop a fully fledged spousal program, because the people that are in the EWC, including myself, have never been posted before. So we need to hear from people that have been posted, that have been spouses, to assist us with the design of that particular program so that it addresses specific real needs. So that workshop is taking place on Friday, so we're looking forward to that. And I think it's for the spouses, it's been quite good for them to participate and contribute for the development of other spouses. We also assist them with CVs in particular, the ones that are coming back, because having been away for 4 years, you're coming back, you don't know what the employer market looks like, what the opportunities are, how you put together your CV. So that's one concrete thing that we've done around CVs. If there were resources also, we probably would even assist them to look for jobs or connect them with agencies and so forth. But those are probably some of the things that we will then put in the program that we are in the process of developing. We also have some days in foreign affairs, like the wellness days, where we then do health checks and we do toxins and so forth. We always make sure that the spouses that are just about to leave participate in those wellness days. Similarly, we also have talks that focuses on issues of interest. A good example is the recent one that we just had on parenting. Okay. So when we have workshops like that, be it on parenting or be it on diseases and so forth, we then involve the spouses to come and attend. And this one of parenting was particularly interesting because what we have discovered is that there are specific difficulties for children that get posted. How they integrate in those societies and how they integrate back, there are issues for children that we are also going to look at within the spousal program. So, Chairperson, those are the things that we have implemented, and like I said, we are moving towards the fully fledged spousal program. Thanks. Oh, I might as well, DG, if I can just, the other issue that was raised by my, it was around gender representation. Let me apologize for leaving the column on percentage, total percentages, but as DG said, we're currently sitting at 33%.
four women. Now, the Public Service Commission recently, about 3 months ago, released a comparison for the rest of government in terms of where government departments were sitting. I know we're not there yet, but certainly we were among one of the few that have done particularly well with regard to representation of women. So I was just calling and saying, if you can just get to that, you know, address the 17% in the next 2 years or so. Now, a good example is we advertised and have just gone through the process of filling positions of chief directors. Now, we had to make a difficult decision that said we're not going to fill all those positions of chief directors simply because there were not enough women that made it in there. So we took a decision to say, you know, you can then, therefore, said the men have made it, therefore we're going to appoint them. So a deliberate decision was taken to say, we'd rather leave them open until we've done the best that we can to try and attract women. So clearly they'd be sitting in the 408 that you see reflected as vacancies. But it was a deliberate decision so that we can do some more and try and get a CVs of women that can be appointed as chief directors. And we continue to do that even with directors and so forth. Thanks.
There may be men in the team who are victims of that, but let's leave that.
So we say a few words about Africa. Bear in mind that the one
that's
No, you're correct, DG. Just very briefly. Clonish Osbandi asked about the status of the AFRICOM. Nothing has changed which we made a month or so ago. Safe to say that what we know is that the Americans have now taken a decision to maintain the bases of AFRICOM in Stuttgart, in Germany, because of the reluctance and refusal of many African countries to host AFRICOM.
Nothing. Honourable members, in fact, we have a report that must go before Parliament on the AFRICOM and IPSA. I want to take it that we've agreed that the administration should proceed to submit those reports to Parliament. Didi, I want to bring this meeting to adjourn, although I must indicate that there are a number of other issues that we would have loved to follow up. You know, we've been watching with interest our vote in the Security Council and our current vote on Iran. In fact, I think the minister has received a letter from my side to request for more information, because the morning of that news, everybody phoned to ask me to explain it, and I there was no way that I could explain it except to request for information. We've received documents that from the ambassador that's supposed to be explaining our vote. And this is one of the issues that we wanted to take up, because if you read that document, in our view, it's full of contradictions. On one hand, just to highlight a few, on one hand, the ambassador argues that the Security Council has not taken into account the board updates. In the same breath, he says that, however, we voted it to be consistent with other decisions of the UN, of the Security Council. Now, if the Security Council, in his view, will result into making decisions that have not considered the update of the board that is directly involved. And in fact, in one sentence it says, there's no material evidence that there's a breach by Iran. In fact, they've accounted for all the material. Then it doesn't make sense why then we voted the way we voted. Because the argument for consistency does not hold if facts do not support it. So it creates problems. But however, those are the issues that we wanted to raise. We wanted to ask the DG to share with us the evaluation, the midterm evaluation of our involvement in the UN to say what is the assessment. I've listened with quite interest that there are three areas that we regard as success. But we'll have been interested in a in evaluation of that. There are issues that were outstanding from the previous briefing, DG, issues of Africa Institute we're told that there's an ongoing discussion. We'll have wanted to pursue that in this particular aspect. There are issues related to the decision by the by Parliament, in this case, that came via the Portfolio Committee on Public Service, in regard to the extension of employment issues. And in that resolution, it was said that the Department of Foreign Affairs must report to the Portfolio Committee on the steps taken as part of that. And to date, we have not received any update on that particular aspect. Those are some of the issues that we wanted to raise. The issues of the sister departments, their contribution to the cost that we incur in running the missions. How do we deal with that particular aspect? Issues that we have dealt with, the public accounts have given report to Parliament to agree on the writing of the recoverable debt by the department. We would have wanted to see that in the budget, how was it written off in terms of the budgetary thing. And any of the slides that have been presented, that aspect is not there to show to us where the money came from, to write off those particular areas. We would have been interested, DG, on issues particularly, although you have indicated that it's still going to go to Cabinet on Kosovo. It will be interesting to understand how we take a decision in particular on those issues of Kosovo. But also the issue of the capacity of the department. We've been interested to pursue the allocation that we've given to each mission, to each area. But we'll also be interested in looking at the capacity of the individuals in those particular missions. And whether do they have the capacity to pursue our economic objective that we've set ourselves with those missions. We're sending the right individuals. We are raising this, I'll give you an example, DG. I went to Western Sahara in December and I went through Algeria. And Parliament made arrangements, because I was going on behalf of the Speaker, they made arrangements. What I found in Algeria was pathetic. In fact, they booked me in a hotel that is less than or worse than any hotel you could find in Hillbrook. I had to make a decision to say that I'll book myself and I'll take care of myself. And when you sit down and you look at why should we find ourselves in that situation, I come back to the issues of training, that when we send people, we train them. I'm not sure whether we deal with the human element. We have traveled so many hours. You arrive, there's no one to pick you up. You have to, in a land that you don't know, we have to now start looking for a lift to ask people to take you to point B, because now you are not sure what's happening with yourself. When you come back, you send us with an official. When you come back, he looks at you in the eye to provide transport to move from where you are to the hotel, because he himself is not sure whether he's coming or going. When we look at the numbers on paper, they look good. When you look at the individuals and the quality of work that you, the output, I'm not sure that I will be in a position to claim that our diplomats are, and those individuals, in fact, create a question where you doubt all diplomats. And I must say, when I arrived in Egypt, there was a complete different arrangement. And it tells me that it's not true that it's all the diplomats, but it's the fact that there's a laxity in the management side of things. Because when I arrived in Egypt, there was a complete opposite of my experience in Algeria, both on my way through and on my way back. There was a complete opposite. I'm
I've raised it consistently. I'm aware that you wrote a letter to the Secretary of Parliament, and you argued in that letter that we should seek to involve the head office and the mission. But I argue that even when the mission is involved, when the mission is supposed to have organized those things, you still find a situation where there's just complete disorganization, and there's no tangible explanation that you can give it on that. I'll continue to raise that, because my colleagues assume that being a chair of the foreign affairs, that they should be able also to raise these issues. But I always say to them, it happens to me. And then they find it strange that it happens to me when it happens to them. And they thought that I'll have a different experience, but I have the same experience as them. And I want to insist consistently, I'll continue to raise it, that parliamentarians deserve to be treated different by our missions. They are the political leadership of this country, and I will want to insist all out. They need to be treated differently. We cannot tolerate a situation where parliamentarians are treated as if they are providing counselor services to criminals. It's unacceptable, and in fact I want to insist on that, and I'll keep on raising it until such time that my colleagues are able to say to me, at least we can see improvement of how we get treated when we travel. If that does not happen, DG, I'll continuously raise it to say that these colleagues, they deserve to be treated differently. They are the political leadership of this country, and they must be treated as such. Thank you, DG. We will be able to proceed with this particular meeting probably when the portfolio committee or the study groups of political parties indicate how they would prefer us to proceed with this matter, given the time constraints that were there. Last issue, DG, that we raised this with the Deputy Minister, and we raised this with DG Majid, and we'll raise it yourself. The committee has given clear instruction that we will insist on the early distribution of documents. Yes, there will be parliamentary slow processes. We have met with the management of service officers and want to insist to them that these documents are destined for members. They are not for archiving on their shelves. And therefore, they need to make sure that they get to members on time. We will be putting up processes with the secretary so that every time that the document has arrived on her desk, you will record where. I will then have to make sure that when it delivers that document to members, there's a signature that says, yes, I did receive the document, so that we can deal with this document flow, because it creates a problem and creates a shortcoming on the ability of members to deal with the number of issues that we've asked them to deal with. That we've asked specifically this time that they have to look at the previous budget, they must look at the annual report, and they must look at the new budget. And that requires time to work on those three documents. And they must look at the State of the Nation address, in fact. So we said, if they have to look at all those documents, it means that they require time to go through the documents. Gigi, your last words.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks to the members. Maybe just to say that on the last comment, yes, very much. I think on our side, we'll also, as I indicated, we'll commit to try and respond as promptly as possible to the request from the committee. And try to the extent that there may be shortcomings on our side, we'll try to deal with those also. The second issue is that on the experiences in the mission, I think it's correct for the committee to raise the issue with us. The only request that we would really make is that I was just looking at Nkoli to whether he has an idea about this experience in Algeria. My only plea to members of the committee, I think if we take it, that there's a good intent on our side. It is true, it is correct that not all our diplomats perform at the requisite level. And I think the only way we can try to systematically improve that is when issues are brought to us. So we really do not have a problem with the issues being brought to our attention. What we would really plead for is that as the issues come up, then we are informed so that we can then take the necessary steps. And at least this time we bear in mind that Egypt saved our reputation a bit. We will try to handle that. But we will follow up the issue of Algeria. I think it's going to be very easy for us to try. As I say, I think it doesn't matter how many times for us, I think it will be important for us to know. Then we can take the action.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shepherdson.
DG, we do appreciate the work of the department working hard. And that's why the opposition are not here.
Honorable members and the staff of the department, I'm told that there is lunch prepared at Mike's building. Mike's building.
Oh, that's I think it was